from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Some people like Chris Emma.
I'm one of them. I like Chris Emma. I do. I'm Matt Spiegel, sitting next to Anthony Herron, right here on 670 The Score.
I think you doth protest too much. It's almost like you don't like Chris Emma. You're trying to convince everybody that you do.
No, I'm pushing back against Mark Grody intimating that only some people like Chris Emma. Mm-hmm. But you could argue that that's not what he was saying at all. He might have been saying some people are similar to Chris Emma, but whatever. Listen, listen, it's The Score. It is 5 o'clock. That means when the Bears practice and play this time slot, this show,
it's Emma time somewhere.
We will talk to either Chris Emma or Mark Grody and get the very latest from Bears practice. Hello, Mr. Emma, sir. What's happening today?
How we doing, boys?
We are good. Chris Emma joins us on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Anthony Herron is upset. I am mildly bothered by the fact that we will not see the starters, including Caleb Williams, on Thursday. What do you think about that decision from Matt Eberflus, sir?
I think it's the right decision. I'm okay with it. I like what I've seen so far of the starters, and obviously in particular with Caleb Williams so far in training camp and now in the preseason portion of practice. And those two games that we get to see him, I'm pleased with the way that Caleb Williams came out. That game in Buffalo, 2 series, 4 of 7, 95 yards. And then obviously a mixed bag last Saturday at Soldier Field. He goes 6 of 13 for 75 yards, 5 series. We know what happened those first 3 series. It wasn't pretty, but I like the fact that you saw resilience and response from a young quarterback getting out there, getting it right, leading this offense the right way, getting him some points. I don't care if it was a 2 offense or not. Some of those throws you saw were special. The leadership is there. You talk to players, to coaches about Caleb Williams. They've all been struck by this kid about the way that he's taken charge as the starting quarterback of an NFL team. So I think he's absolutely right on track, if not ahead of track, in terms of where you wanted to see him at this point. And the rest of the starting group, you got a lot of veterans. You got a lot of guys who don't really need these opportunities. So the other aspect, too, frankly, is the bottom of the roster. You have a lot of decisions to make. You've got guys who are fighting for their futures, and you've got a bottom of the roster that's still a little weak. You got to address some of these spots now in the third year of this rebuild. So I think their thought is it's more valuable for those guys than it is for Caleb Williams and the starters.
And you guys have had an opportunity to talk to Shane Waldron a variety of times during the preseason here. And so far, I've been impressed with the balance that he's struck between wanting to showcase that development of the mechanics within the pocket that you want a professional quarterback to have, while also accentuating the skills of Caleb Williams, calling him into some movement. What have been your observations of how schematically the Bears offense has operated and what you've heard from Waldron when you've had a chance to talk to him?
I think Shane has really empowered Caleb throughout the course of training camp and through the preseason games. I love that when you got in that spot close to the goal line and it was 3 passing plays. They weren't saying, let's run the ball. Let's try to do this or that. The world's your oyster, Caleb. Go get him. Like I like the fact that that was his opportunity. And you've seen that throughout practices as well, setting up Caleb Williams for different unique scenarios. Everything you can imagine they've thrown at this kid so far. But it all kind of comes down to the idea of that grasp of leadership and that command and the operation he has of this offense. And he seems to be in a really good place as it relates to what it takes to lead an offensive line, to get in sync with his receivers, to operate with Shane Waldron, to create concert with that running game as well. And I see this offense in a really good place and getting better throughout practices. Early on in camp, it was a real problem they had with some of the pre-snap issues and the operation was a mess. You've not had that as much anymore. Now it's gotten a lot better. It's still a work in progress, but I think it's a reflection of a young quarterback who's continued to master what he needs to do.
All right. Before we get to some Matt Eberflus sound on a couple of different topics, there was a fight today at practice. Ian Wheeler hit by Jervon Dexter and pretty hard and didn't love that. On the next play, Velus Jones was tackled hard, apparently by TJ Edwards. Things escalated. Cole Kmet, I was told, got in the middle of it. And what I'm wondering is, this was the last open practice. Right, Chris? This is the last open practice. And with the fact that they're not going to play Thursday, I don't know how many more chances they're going to have to really go hard. Like I wonder why the tempers flared up today, if there's anything related to the schedule of things in your mind.
I think Big Ann can speak to this as well, but you get to a point in camp where you just kind of get sick of guys. You've been going at it with the same guy for like an offensive or defensive lineman for day after day, rep after rep, and maybe it's a cheap shot that gets built up from weeks before or just whatever it may be. Like, you get to the point where you kind of just get sick of each other. You've been going at it now for more than a month at this point, and like, you just kind of reach that escalation point, that boiling point. So it's amazing they have gone this far without a fight. I think that there was skirmishes or kerfuffles, whatever you want to call it, early on, but nothing to this level. Not that it was like blowout or anything, but it's been a very clean camp so far in terms of that aspect. So, yeah, if they got after it a little bit today, they're going to get after it tomorrow, too. I was going to talk about that in the Nuggets and Tidbits, but 2-hour practice before you get into your flight and head off to Kansas City. So I like that. You raise the intensity a little bit. You're getting sick of each other at this point, right?
All right, good. So they will get after it tomorrow. And how much more? And you know, there'll be a bunch more tough practices between now and the opener? What do you think?
They better be, because they're not going to play on Thursday night, and you got to come out sharp early in the season. You can't allow that rust to set in. My concern for the starters getting nothing on Thursday night was that you're going to go weeks without them having truly competitive snaps. So the tempo in practice, even in those controlled settings, that has to matter, and especially, Emma, for the offensive line. So what are we seeing early in the week here just from the lineup on the offensive line? Are they in a position where they're starting to establish a little bit of continuity?
I think so. I'd love to give you an emphatic yes. It's all clicking for them. I have major concerns there still, like everybody else. I mean, the Ryan Bates injury is tough because it kind of sets you back at both center and right guard. Like, he was competing for that spot with Coleman Shelton. That injury puts the competition out the window. I think Coleman Shelton's your starting center. Ryan Bates, I think, if Nate Davis, I think this would be a competition right now if Ryan Bates was healthy. Nate Davis is healthy. Ryan Bates is not. That threw the offensive line off a little bit. You've not been able to have the full kind of competition at both of those spots that you wanted. So you're kind of in the hands of the five you got right now. I think your starting five is more or less set for better or worse. And you hope you avoid injuries. You hope you avoid inconsistent performances. We'll see if Bates factors in, if he's able to get healthy close to week one or beyond week one. But I'd love to give you a clean yes. The old line looks great. Everything's going to be fine. I have major concerns, like a lot of other people do, too.
All right, let's get to the tape. How did the flu sound when talking about the QB today?
Yeah, Matt Eberflus gave context on Caleb Williams' performance on the field, but I love what he said about Caleb Williams in the classroom, in the meeting rooms, everything you get behind the scenes. Matt Eberflus said some really interesting and real stuff when he talked about the intake ability of Caleb Williams. Here's Matt Eberflus.
Well, he's a great learner, very smart. He works really hard, but he's also able to work with others. You know, he's compatible personality-wise, instinct-wise, to be able to communicate with people, and his willingness to learn. Some people like, you know, you first time you meet him, it's like, man, this guy is a know-it-all. You know what I mean? You get that feeling. Not about any of you guys, and you know, it kind of turns you off, right? A little bit. He is not that way at all. You know, this guy has had tremendous success. You know, Heisman, first pick in the draft, very successful as a college player. And, you know, and his willingness to learn is second to none. I mean, he just wants to grab the information, learn, and get better. And when he does have adversity, he rises to the challenge, and that's what you want from your quarterback.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I mean, it's what it is like describing a likability but also a coachability. And just, I mean, Ant, and you can speak to this. When somebody comes in decorated like that, like he's talking about, and they could come off like a know-it-all or could come off like they don't need the work. We have seen people in all walks of life walk in like that. But to have him come in this way, the way that Flus is describing, it opens a door for coaches, opens a door for teammates, and raises the level of possibilities, doesn't it?
And I really enjoyed Caleb postgame, you know, putting things on himself, some things that did seem legitimately to be his fault with some cadence and some quickness with the delivery of cadence at points and, you know, the way he operated within the pocket and passes that did they sail when he was trying to get to Keenan Allen or should Keenan have caught the ball. And Emma, even going back to that postgame the other day, I was just impressed with the way that Caleb carried himself after a game where they did start really slow, and then he had the opportunity to make some big plays in closing out his time in action there. But it does seem that that demeanor is a part of what Flus is referencing there.
Without a doubt. I was the one who asked that question to Caleb postgame, just kind of about the overview of what how he felt he performed and what he's looking for on film. And I love that answer. I mean, you mentioned it, Big Andy. He took accountability for some of his own mistakes, took accountability for a false start penalty, a sack, things that I didn't even see live in the game and didn't even really catch immediately after the game. But while rewatching it, like some of the disconnections with receivers, I love that answer because I've asked probably that same variation of questions to many other Bears quarterbacks in the past. And you don't get that kind of detail in self-accountability from anybody. Forget a quarterback, from coaches. It says a lot about Caleb Williams' realness and authenticity. And you've heard about that from everybody who's encountered him around that building, too. He has a great way about him. I really admire that. You've not seen this kid have the look of a bad day. He's always got a smile on his face when things are going great or when things are going bad. And people are drawn to that because he's got a natural leadership ability, but he's real and he's just being himself. And I really like the way Matt Eberflus described that.
So where are we with the roster in terms of the roster coming together? And is what we have what we're going to get in terms of who's in camp?
I think to some degree, yes, but we've also seen Ryan Poles be active after the waiver wire turn comes through and looking at different guys. Now, that was a different situation. Granted, you're talking about the first 2 years of a rebuild where you're trying to get any kind of talent you can on this roster. I think they're pretty well set. I'll have my 53-man projection later this week, 670thescore.com for that. Like, I feel pretty confident about the way it's outlined so far. I love what Ryan Poles said a couple months ago, saying this is going to be a tough team to make. And he's right to some degree, but I also think there's you're still struggling at different spots at the bottom of the roster. The depth chart is, you know, you can't play next man up as well when you are still – it's only year three of a rebuild, and they are better at the front lines positions. They have better starting roles at that point. But I think you're still kind of addressing some of the bottom of the roster and hoping you don't have injuries at key spots. So I'm curious to see how aggressively they do hit the waiver wire. That's a week and a half off. That's that Labor Day weekend period where you are going through the waiver wire. But I think they feel really good about what they have internally right now.
I was telling Spiegs a little while ago, making a comp between where the White Sox were back in 2021 and where the Bears are right now. I'm feeling like the Bears could maybe go a little bit further. We know they maybe tried pass rusher last week and it didn't work out. What did Flus say about the pass rush?
Yeah, it is curious because we do know now the idea of going after a guy like a Matthew Judon, and they were ready to do it. Ryan Poles said right out of the gate, he feels really confident about this group, but at the same point, they're going to do their due diligence. So Matt Eberflus was asked about that today. He gave an endorsement to the guys that he has. Here's Matt Eberflus on the Bears pass rushers.
I feel really good about where we are in terms of with Book and Walk and, you know, and Dom, all those guys that are in that other spot. And, you know, those guys have different skill sets that they bring to the table. And those guys play really hard. And the first thing in defensive line play is having a great motor. And those guys have really improved, and they've done a good job with that.
Would Ngakoue help you? Would Ngakoue help you coach him last year? Do you think he would help this roster?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into hypotheticals. I do like him. I like him as a man. I like him as a worker. You know, he certainly has done good things for us in the past. But again, that's speculation and other things like that. So, but again, I do love him in terms of the man and the player.
I know you mentioned you're going to do your roster projection coming up, but it's hard for me to imagine them not keeping both Hardy, and obviously Booker at this point. So that would make four. Will they keep a fifth defensive end? A lot of teams keep four, but keeping five seems to make sense, perhaps, in this instance, Chris.
Yeah, Spies, the other guy in that equation is Jacob Martin, who they signed back in March, and I think they saw him as a high upside rotational piece. He's not been able to get out there and prove himself. He got hurt early in training camp, and he's been on the sidelines ever since. So when you look at establishing your depth of that position beyond just the guys you mentioned and the young guys with high upside and high potential, you still want something more proven as well. Yannick Ngakoue, you heard Matt Eberflus asked about him. That was somebody who's been on their radar for much of their offseason. I've heard from sources that he still is on their radar, but he's looked elsewhere. The deal has not come through. Yannick Ngakoue has been patient throughout this process, but at the same point, like, you're getting close to week one now. So I think that price has probably come down a little bit from what the Bears were looking for and what Ngakoue was wanting. I could see a reunion there. There's still plenty of time to get that deal done. And that's a guy who's kept himself in good shape, come off the injury pretty well. And I think the Bears would be happy to bring him back.
And if they do, then it would deepen the edge for the Chicago Bears. But as much as Austin Booker's impressed us in the media, sounds like he's been impressing his teammates as well.
Yeah, Red Montez Sweat said that Booker's way, way more developed than even Montez Sweat was when he came in, which is, you know, maybe some sunshine and balloons that he's offering there. But I'm now at the point, I don't want Ngakoue. I'd rather have both the kids. And hell, if you believe that Dominique Robinson still has something in there, something that they want to develop, like, I'm good with keeping all five that way, in addition to DeMarcus Walker and Montez Sweat. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, look, you invest in those guys, and we've heard from Matt Eberflus many times before about really believing in playing those rookies, getting them an opportunity. Nobody's more ready for that, it seems, than Austin Booker. Like, he's put himself in that position to play a key role. He's established himself well with the coaching staff. They seem to believe in him. So I'm with you, Speaks. I believe in that upside. I think he could play a key role for this defense. And if you want to have that veteran stability, you got DeMarcus Walker still to rush opposite Montez Sweat. You'd like to see, as you mentioned, Dominique Robinson. He's a third-year guy, and I know it's just not been there for him, but think about his path to this point, going from quarterback to tight end, now to being a pass rusher. He still is a developmental guy that you'd like to see some more out of in that role.
So Montez Sweat talked today?
Montez Sweat talked today, and he raved about Austin Booker. Let's get right to it. High praise for Montez Sweat on the rookie Austin Booker.
I mean, I've reiterated so many times. I mean, he's just a tremendous talent. Really light years ahead of where a rookie should be. But I'm excited for the year and what he brings to the table.
Now, when you reflect back on your own rookie year, what were the biggest things that, when you got into the regular season, became eye-opening as a pass rusher?
I think the biggest thing is just experience, just getting those reps against different tackles and different offenses, and really just getting the confidence of playing in the NFL.
With Austin, how have you seen him get better throughout training camp?
Yeah, I mean, he noticed, he's kind of starting to notice how guys like to block him. He's trying out new moves, and he's just learning the defense and learning how to move faster within it. So, real big leaps from him.
We've heard that he doesn't make a decision as to what he's going to do until he kind of engages and can sense kind of what the offense is trying to do to him. And is that unusual? And what does that show about him? Is that just the way he likes to do things, or does that take a special kind of?
I mean, as a pass rusher, you always have a sort of a pass rush plan. But that pass rush plan can get thrown off by depending on what the tackle does sometimes. So reaction time and what you do in the move area is pretty key. He's done a pretty good job with that.
Man, Montez Sweat is an adult. He is very much an adult. I love hearing that stuff, the way that he's talking about Booker. And you played the D-line. I mean, what do you think about what he's talking about there in terms of the stuff that Booker's learning and showing? And
whenever I've coached the position over the years, I tell every D-lineman I work with, you have a plan when you put your hand in the dirt. Now, the counter off of that plan needs to be reactionary, but you don't want to come out of your stance and hesitate. You don't want to come out of your stance and be in some sort of a gray area where you're uncertain what to do, because the best way to be able to execute a counter move is to force that blocker, force that offensive lineman, have to react because you've rushed with commitment on the front end of it. And it seems like that's what Austin Booker has really gotten much better about, whether it's bringing power or speed. He's starting to set up his counter moves really well. And you know, who knows? The overall production of the D-line, I still have concerns there, but I'm glad they seem to at least be kind of rooting for each other and watching these young guys come along.
Any delicious Bears nuggets, Chris Hema?
Yeah, we covered the fight. As I mentioned, that was the first real fight of training camp. I remember the days when it was like Kyle Long and Akeem Hicks, and it felt like there was a fight every other play. So it's been a different pace for training camp this year. Play of the day came from Caleb Williams on a dime to the corner of the end zone, and Gerald Everett, who I think is going to be an important piece of this offense. You look at the depth of this group, made a touchdown catch, a great catch for him. Another rookie to focus on, Karan Amagaji, back at practice, activated from the NFI list on Sunday. He's working in at left tackle. I don't think he's competing with Braxton Jones by any means right now, but keep an eye on him throughout this year. That's a developmental guy I think they see as a potential option at that spot long term. At the very least, Braxton Jones should feel a little bit of competition at that spot. And practice 2 hours tomorrow. They're going to get back to it in the morning, hop on a flight off to Kansas City, and get ready for that preseason finale.
Hema, is there a position group as you kind of prepare to put all this stuff together at the end, and it can change between now and the end of the game Thursday night? But I wonder, as they're formulating their roster plans, I don't think running back is as difficult a choice as some folks are making it out to be. But the secondary does strike me as a spot where maybe there's some tough calls in the secondary. Maybe there's some tough calls at wide receiver. Is there a position group you've got your eye on where maybe a surprising guy might not make the squad here?
You mentioned a wide receiver is a spot where I'm kind of looking. I mean, you can kind of form the top four with, you know, the big three, obviously, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze. Tyler Scott, I think, is roster lock as well. If you're keeping six, you got two spots that are kind of wide open for you there. Dante Pettis had a strong game on Saturday. He's a reliable veteran. Colin Johnson starred in the Hall of Fame game. I'm more focused on his special teams value if you're going to round out him at the bottom of the depth chart. Valus Jones, obviously, running back, receiver, wherever it is, he's fighting for a spot. There's a number of guys who are competing for those roles. So, obviously, as we know, when you get to the bottom of the wide receiver depth chart, there's special teams value that you really got to focus on. DeAndre Carter is one more name in there as well, who's got return abilities. And that kind of, I think it's either him or Valus Jones kind of competing for some of these spots. I'm really curious to see how they've closed out that position. And keep an eye on that spot, wide receivers. You get to waiver wire turn next weekend.
Chris Hema, thanks, man. Great job. We appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
All right, thanks, buddy. Hema. That's Chris Hema joining us right here on 670 The Score. The excellence that was evident in a great ball player is seemingly gone completely. He's back in town, but what happened to the excellence? We discuss next on 670 The Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Two balls and a strike on Lester. The pitch, John showing bunt. It's inside the throw, home. Baez tries to score. He does! Baez scores! Cubs lead 3-0. He beat the relay from Turner back to the plate.
The pitch outside, the throw by Ross. One hop throw. Baez tags him out. Another great play by Baez. A one hop throw by Ross.
We're still figuring the whole thing out. Sky's the limit.
There's no doubt about it, man. Are you kidding me? And I do believe that that young man's going to grow in. He's growing right now.
Once he stops swinging at the slide in the dirt, this guy becomes a superstar. And I think that's accurate.
I've worked with young players before, and if you're fearless and have that kind of ability, you can be outstanding. And I think that he has all those different qualities.
Baez hits it on the ground to third, Gonzalez.
This is so good.
Oh my goodness. Wow, you gotta be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. They stole a run. You have got to be kidding me. Javi Baez, El Mago indeed.
Anything can happen, to be honest. You guys see the business side. I'm hopefully I stay here. If not, obviously, I know where I came from. You know, I know Chicago's a big thing, and the fans love every sport here. So my heart is always going to be here.
The Javi Baez era was quite a thing, man. I mean, and all the way back in the day, he was a cookie. I remember sitting with Dan McNeil in Mesa, and it's Matt Spiegel with Anthony Herron right here on 670 The Score, and we're talking, me and Mac were talking to Theo Epstein, spring training of 2014, I believe it was, when that Mesa complex opened, and Mac said, when are we going to see Javi Baez? Fans need a cookie. And Theo said, not trying to give you a cookie, trying to give you the whole meal. And that was the beginning of, like, sort of the conversation about Javi's, like, this guy, have you seen this guy? He's got bat speed like Gary Sheffield, and he's a great shortstop. Oh, my God, look at this. And then he got here, and he was bad in 2015. At the end of 2015, having come up, he had 229 plate appearances. He struck out 95 times.
It's a lot.
And that offseason, I, Matt Spiegel, was saying, trade him. Trade him to the Mets. The Mets have all the young arms. They need some young bats. In fact, I said...
Kind of like you want to do with Ian Happ earlier this season.
Sure. Absolutely. You know who I wanted? You know the young... Anybody want to guess the young Mets pitcher that I wanted at the time?
Let me see.
His name was Zach Wheeler. Oh. Zach Wheeler.
Okay.
So that one would have aged okay.
Yeah.
Would have aged all right. But anyway, but I wanted to trade him. And then 2016 comes and he's playing beautifully. And they win as he comes up and plays second base. And Starlin Castro gets displaced along the way. And it all makes sense. And I said on Twitter one day, I said, my name is Matt and I once wanted to trade Javi Baez for pitching. And then somebody made me a shirt that I'm wearing right now. They sent me this shirt.
That's what that is.
It says, my name is Matt, and I once wanted to trade Javi Baez for pitching. Because I had to own that. Okay. I had to wear it, literally wear that.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. And then Javi became Javi, and he was unbelievable to watch. There was nobody like him, and you heard all there. He would break people's brains. He would break defenders' brains. That dude, that first baseman for the Pirates, never played in baseball again. After the Pirates cut him, he went to the Korean League. I don't even think he's still playing in the Korean League. He was so embarrassed and so ashamed. He literally broke his baseball soul. I mean, Javi would do that to people. And...
He could draw it out of teammates like he did with Wilson Contreras. You know, I mean, like the other teammates. That's part of why I was asking Nico Horner about that earlier, too. Just where that flair, that bravado, that haviness, you know, the El Mago. How much of that is able to just sort of rub off on folks and say, you know what? Maybe I don't have to sort of be the, you know, if he's the cookie, I don't have to be the cookie cutter baseball player. I can kind of try stuff and do things that are unique and different. And, you know, Javi was able to make some of that stuff look easy, but it's just because he had this fluidity and this ease about the way that he carried himself on the field. And it was a lot easier to enjoy it when he was being productive because he was so productive for a few seasons.
Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, he's not in Detroit. But those last few years in Chicago, like the conversation about who are they going to pay?
Right.
Are they going to pay Chris Bryant? Why is that taking so long? Are they going to find a way to keep Rizzo around? Well, man, find a position for Schwarber and pay him. Javi was my guy during that stretch. I'm sitting here with Shep talking about everything, like after Cubs games on the weekends or in the evenings and different points. I'm talking to Nick Szepkowski, like, man, Javi is the guy they need to pay. Mm-hmm. Javi is the guy who's still getting better every season. Javi's the guy they got to figure this thing out with.
Well, man, they didn't pay any of them.
No.
And the one they should have kept is Schwarber.
Right.
That's the one they should have kept, as it all turns out. But they didn't pay any of them. And it's just such a layered thing because Javi, like, he had the 2018 season with the 34 homers, 111 ribs, and 881 OPS, finished his second in OPS, but it was never really even about the numbers. It was about the other stuff that you saw, right?
Yeah.
My wife had the obvious t-shirt, Superman wears Javi Baez pajamas. That you know, it's a great T-shirt, a great line. I wrote one time that he was your favorite player. You know, like he had that thing, but he never really found the patience and the maturity at the plate that Joe Maddon talked about. When Joe Maddon said he could be Manny Ramirez if he just learned to spit at those sliders, he never really found the patience or the maturity, and we can wonder about why. Jed Hoyer addressed the media just a little while ago over there at Wrigley Field. Our Bruce Levine was there. Here's Jed talking about Javi Baez, who is back tonight with the Detroit Tigers. His first time playing at Wrigley Field is tonight, not as a member of the Cubs.
I love watching Javi play here. You know, I actually went over there to say hi to him and talk to him. I really enjoyed our relationship. I mean, favorite moments, you know, kind of random ones. I mean, I feel like, you know, his home run in game one against the Giants, you know, obviously the massive bat flip and the ball went in the basket, you know, but that was such a big moment, such a big game for us. Given the fact that we were trying to beat a veteran team that had a lot of success, that was one. You know, one random memory I have of him, I always just thought his fearlessness was his greatest attribute. Any moment he didn't care. He wanted the big stage, and I remember, I think it was against, I think it was Hunter Pence, but it was the last out of that one of those games. He just was so casual. The last time he ran through it, one hand, flicks it to first. I'm like, oh God, can you just break down, field it normally? But he just never had any concern about failing. And I think that's really what made him successful in those big moments, was that he was fearless. And then obviously, he's not here today, but yeah, I remember sitting with Jeff Greenberg and watching that, whatever you want to call the play in Pittsburgh. But I mean, that's like one of those moments I'll never forget. Like, you don't, for better or for worse, you don't see something truly you've never seen before very often in the big leagues, and that was one. And then also just, you know, the guy we traded him for with Pete, it's like there was just so many times where it felt like we used to say he's invisible, like he just run and somehow the end result would be he'd be safe. And I've never seen anything like that in all of my time in baseball, that Javi's ability just somehow run and somehow, you know, matrix his body in a way to be safe. And he's a special player and a special entertainer. And you know, I don't like the way this chapter of his career has gone for him. I know he's struggled, and you know, I have super fond memories of him. He helped us win a lot of games here, and as a result, I think he'll always be a fan favorite, as he should, and I hope the fans give him an awesome ovation.
That's great stuff. Invisible is right. I remember him like, I remember Jim Deshays at one point screaming, "You're invisible! Keep going! Keep going!" Because he would have that effect on people. Just absolutely bananas.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. And the way he played baseball, I mean, we've seen it. A few examples in this town lately where, you know, him, Tim Anderson, it felt like, man, all right, we got some guys who were going to, like, draw in extra fans to mm-hmm. baseball. And that was a part of the case I was making when, you know, the Cubs were trying to figure out who are they going to pay. And my thing was, like, Javi is just different. And, yes, the other guys, maybe they're going to be more productive. Maybe they're going to do things a little more by the book than him. But, man, he is so fun. And he is so invigorating to fans that are just there showing up, watching him do his Javi thing. And it was – It was electric when he was on the baseball field. There's not a lot of players you say that about.
It's a sad decay, man.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me sad to watch Chris Bryant in Colorado. It makes me sad to watch Javi in Detroit and to look at the numbers and see what happens. And there's something so, I don't know, it's sports tragic. It's not real tragic.
Yeah, right.
I'm well aware of the bigger tragedies in the world, but the sports tragedy of it, and it's, I mean, the Javi one, it just, I mean, we kind of hinted at it when we talked to Brett Boone earlier, and it's there's got to be a willingness to remake yourself if it's not working. Mm-hmm. and I don't know, I don't know if Javi doesn't seem to be showing that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's clearly not working. It's like when you see the amount of chase, there's been moments where we see Luis Robert chase everything off the plate and just never stop and never seem to stop. But then sometimes he will stop. I mean, Robert had a game last week. It was 4-for-5 with two bombs, you know? And that's not just getting lucky. It's there's times, and I know it's hard. Like, it's really hard to not swing at that outside slider. It's incredibly difficult. So it's a mix of it being difficult and just not necessarily finding a way to work at it and do it. And even if you work at it and do it, it's still going to be freaking hard, because I think it's the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a baseball. You know, so it's crazy. But just like, to see this kind of decay, he's the worst player in baseball. He's the worst player.
That's because
baseball.
Tim Anderson isn't in baseball anymore.
Oh, God, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean,
those two guys who were facing,
in the not too distant past, those two guys who were the future of baseball at the same position were both in this city at their peak. And now, they, at least at one point this season, were the two worst players in baseball. We wouldn't have seen that coming. You know, with Anderson leading the majors in average, with Javi leading the majors in highlights, just being must-see TV for this sport that could use must-see TV type athletes, the draw that he became with this franchise, with the Cubs, and what he meant to them for that sort of glimmer of time. It was something, man. You don't get it that often.
No, you don't. Little more from Jed Hoyer when we come back, and before we wrap things up and hand it off to Mark Grody at the top of the hour, and then Cubs baseball at 6:30. It's Speaks and Ann Heron on 670 The Score.
We're back with more of The Score Afternoon Show with Matt Spiegel and Anthony Heron on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
Little Talking Heads right there. Thank you so much. By the way, Thursday night at Theater on the Lake, big benefit for Misericordia. This band called Tributosaurus is playing. We're doing a set. We're doing a set of the Talking Heads, in fact, on Thursday. A set of Talking Heads.
I was hoping you were going to do Pointer Sisters myself.
Oh, yeah. No, never did the Pointer Sisters.
It's not too late. It's never too late, Speaks.
You think so?
Uh-huh.
But Thursday is a set of Talking Heads and a set of 80s. From our like one hit wonders of the 1980s show.
I thought that was Score Afternoon, so a set of Talking Heads.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like you pretty much described the Pointer Sisters. 80s. They were more than a one hit wonder, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they had a bunch of hits.
A couple of hits.
So, Cubs getting ready to play against Detroit, scuffling as they have in this giant taunting penalty of a season that they have forced you to endure. Jed Hoyer always has talked about hopefully building the bones of a championship team. Like they will be willing to spend when he sees, quote, the bones of a championship team. And I thought that was supposed to be this year. Does this team play like it has the bones of a championship team? I'm not so sure. But anyway, he was asked about the current core that they have with some of the players under contract as of right now, and how the 2016 World Series core compares.
Time passes, I guess, is the way I would probably say it. That we had a core group of players that led to a lot of winning. They came up young and they led to a lot of winning. And we had a really successful run with those guys. And I don't think anything that happened with trading them or anything that happened subsequently should take away from that. And that's kind of how I see it. That sometimes baseball is a young man's game, and all those guys haven't had the success that they had here elsewhere, but I don't think that takes away from what happened here. Like I said, we had a really successful run with those guys, and for generations they should be coming back here. And I look at it like, we have all these statues of guys that are in the Hall of Fame. I think that, I don't know if any of those guys are going to be Hall of Famers, but I do feel like their impact on the Cubs is every bit, what those guys was in terms of winning and transforming the city, and they should be treated that way when they come back here.
So that's Jed Hoyer talking about that 2016 team and how he looks back on it historically, that obviously including Javier Baez, who is here tonight with Detroit.
What do you feel like Jed learned from that experience? I mean, from that building everything up, being a part of, helping Theo build everything up, 2015, 2016, winning some divisions after that, but not really being a team that that seemed like the best in baseball any year after that. So now, all right, you tear it back down, you build it back up, and now he's here.
Yeah.
Is there something you feel good like question. Is different or more sustainable about the approach he's taking?
No, not necessarily. I do feel like, though, economically, he's trying, legitimately trying. It's a good conversation because I think he's legitimately trying to build it in a way that he and Theo did not in Boston and the way that he and Theo did not here in terms of trying to maintain sustainability and try to keep it fungible and manageable. Malleable is the word I'm looking for from year to year. So you're not locked into too many bad contracts, you know, because like they got into some bad contracts and then had to sell it off like Darvish. You know, in
but
Boston.
He was bad the first year, and then he was really good.
Yeah, he was.
Like a bad contract at first, and then it wasn't.
Yeah, and then they decided to sell it off. Yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, I'm going to answer that at a time when the exit music is not playing underneath us.
Okay.
Because it's a good
requires
question.
Requires more nuance.
Yeah. You and I are together next week for a couple of days, Monday and Tuesday.
Yep.
Next week, I look forward to that. Always love working with you. Tomorrow it's me and Gabe Ramirez right here on the afternoon
show. Gabe can scat.
Can he really?
And he's got footwork.
Oh, I know he's got footwork. That man can dance.
Right.
Whew.
Right.
It's that boy band training.
He's tried to keep that a secret for years. I'm glad that's out publicly more often
now. Come on, man.
Right?
That's the lead tomorrow. 2:20. Gabe, let's talk about your boy band training. Thank you so much to our guest today. Brett Boone was on the show. Nico Horner was on the show. Terrific, as always. Paul Papps from the Dan Patrick Show.
He loves me, that Paul Papps.
He really does. Big fan of you. He knew what number you wore, probably because he Googled it, but it sounded
like.
He's
got a better memory than I do.
Yeah, okay. And then Chris Emma was on the show as well. Coming up next, it is Mark Grody with Training Camp Live. Thank you to Tyler Ferengul and Robbie Triano for doing a terrific job. Thanks much, everybody. Mark Grody's next. See you tomorrow. It's me, Matt Spiegel, for Anthony Herron on 670 The Score. Talking to Nico Horner here on Parkinson Spiegel.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more of the Score Afternoon Show with Matt Spiegel and Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, little talking heads right there. Thank you so much. By the way, Thursday night at Theater on the Lake, big benefit for Misericordia. This band called Tributosaurus is playing. We're doing a set. We're doing a set of the Talking Heads, in fact, on Thursday. A set of Talking Heads.
I was hoping you were going to do Pointer Sisters myself.
Oh, yeah, no. Never did the Pointer Sisters.
It's not too late. It's never too late, Speaks.
You think so?
Uh-huh.
But no, Thursday is a set of Talking Heads and a set of 80s from our like one-hit wonders of the 1980s show.
I thought that was Score Afternoon, so a set of Talking Heads.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like you pretty much described the Pointer Sisters. 80s. I mean, they were more than a one-hit wonder, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they had a bunch of hits.
A couple hits.
So, Cubs getting ready to play against Detroit, scuffling as they have in this giant taunting penalty of a season that that they have forced you to endure. Jed Hoyer always has talked about hopefully building the bones of a championship team. Like they will be willing to spend when he sees, quote, the bones of a championship team. And I thought that was supposed to be this year. Does this team play like it has the bones of a championship team? I'm not so sure. But anyway, he was asked about the current core that they have with some of the players under contract as of right now and how the 16 2016 World Series core compares?
Time passes, I guess, is the way I would probably say it. That, you know, we had a core group of players that led to a lot of winning. They came up young and they led to a lot of winning. And we had a really successful, you know, run with those guys. And I don't think anything that happened with trading them or anything that happened subsequently should take away from that. And that's kind of how I see it. That, like, you know, sometimes baseball is a young man's game, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, all those guys haven't had the success that they had here elsewhere, but I don't think that takes away from what happened here. You know, like I said, we had a really successful run with those guys, and, you know, for generations, they should be coming back here. And I look at it like, you know, we have all these, statues of guys that are in the Hall of Fame. I think that, you know, I don't know if any of those guys are going to be Hall of Famers, but I do feel like their impact on the Cubs is every bit, you know, what those guys was in terms of, you know, winning and transforming the city, and they should be treated that way when they come back here.
So that's Jed Hoyer talking about that 2016 team and how he looks back on it historically, that obviously including Javier Baez, who is here tonight with Detroit.
What do you feel like Jed learned from that experience? I mean, from that building everything up, being a part of, you know, helping Theo build everything up, 2015, 2016, winning some divisions after that, but not really being a team that seemed like the best in baseball any year after that. So now, all right, you tear it back down, you build it back up, and now he's here.
Yeah.
Is there something you feel
Good
like
question.
Is different or more sustainable about the approach he's taking?
No, not necessarily. I do feel like, though, economically, he's legitimately trying. It's a good conversation because I think he's legitimately trying to build it in a way that he and Theo did not in Boston and the way that he and Theo did not here, in terms of trying to maintain sustainability and try to keep it fungible and manageable. Malleable is the word I'm looking for, from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not locked into too many bad contracts, you know, because like they got into some bad contracts and then had to sell it off, like Darvish. You know, in
but
Boston.
He was bad the first year, and then
he was
really good.
Yeah, he was.
It felt like a bad contract at first, and then it wasn't.
Yeah, and then they decided to sell it off. Yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, I'm going to answer that at a time when the exit music is not playing underneath us.
Okay.
Because it's a good
requires
question.
Requires more nuance.
Yeah. You and I are together next week for a couple of days, Monday and Tuesday.
Yep.
Next week. I look forward to that. Always love working
Skibbity
with you, Anthony. Tomorrow it's me and Gabe Ramirez right here on the afternoon
Gabe
show.
Can scat.
Can he really?
And he's got footwork.
Oh, I know he's got footwork.
Uh-huh.
That man can dance.
Right.
Whew.
Right.
It's that boy band training.
He's tried to keep that a secret for years. I'm glad that's out publicly more often now.
Come on, man.
Right.
That's the lead tomorrow. 2:20. Gabe, let's talk about your boy band training. Thank you so much to our guests today. Brett Boone was on the show. Nico Horner was on the show. Terrific,
Nico!
As always. Paul Papps from the Dan Patrick Show.
He loves me, that Paul Papps.
He really does. Big fan of you. He knew what number you wore, probably because he Googled it, but it sounded
like. He's got a better
memory
than I do.
Yeah, okay. And then Chris Emma was on the show as well. Coming up next, it is Mark Grody with Training Camp Live. Thank you to Tyler Ferengul and Robbie Triano for doing a terrific job. Thanks much, everybody. Mark Grody's next. See you tomorrow. It's me, Matt Spiegel, for Anthony Herron on 670 The Score. Talking to Nico Horner here on Parkinson Spiegel.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.